The European Patent Office podcasts bring you an insight into the technology and innovation shaping the world.
Hello and welcome to this podcast from the European Patent Office, in which we will be discussing the economic impact of Europe's IPR-intensive industries. Now, analysis of the economic performance across all sectors shows that those making above-average use of patents, trademarks, copyright and so on consistently outperform other sectors on things like wages, GDP and employment. My name is Jeremy Philpott, and I work in communication at the European Patent Office. Joining me today are the experts behind a recent study. First, we have the Chief Economist of the European Union Intellectual Property Office, Nathan Weissmann. Nathan worked in telecoms and finance for 20 years before joining the EU IPO 15 years ago, and he has been working in their observatory for the last 10 years. Welcome, Nathan.
Hello, Jeremy. Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm delighted to have this chance to talk about the fruits of our excellent cooperation with the EPO.
You're very kind. So, we also have joining us the EPO Chief Economist, Yann Menier. Yann and his team have just published a new study, co-authored with Nathan's team, on the economic performance of the so-called IPR-intensive industries in Europe. Welcome, Yann.
Hello, Jeremy. Hello, Nathan. I'm pleased to be here.
So, first question for me, really, is why a cooperation between EU IPO and EPO?
Well, we started working together in 2013 on the level of the economics teams because, of course, EPO and EU IPO have had an ongoing cooperation for many years. What inspired us to work together on this particular study was a study that was published in 2012 by the United States Patent and Trademark Office, which looked at IPR-intensive sectors in the US economy. And we wanted to do something similar for the European economy, but broaden it to include more IP rights. This is why we included six different IP rights. And, of course, since the expertise in many areas, including patents, most obviously lies with the EPO, it was a natural thing for us to do this together with the EPO.
Yes, indeed. And actually, one of the key interests of the study is that it demonstrates the complementarity of these different types of IP rights, which is a very important message for policymakers and businesses to understand.
So you talk about six intellectual property rights. I think most people could name two or maybe three, but I think six is a bit more than most people are used to. So could you explain a bit more about these different IP rights and how you're measuring a sector as being above average or not?
Yes, I think it's good indeed to introduce these different IP rights and to explain how we identify industries that use them intensively. So let me start with the most famous ones, I would say, the trademarks and the patents or the designs. Patents protect inventions that have an industrial application for a given period of time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The trademarks protect distinctive signs, typically a brand, for instance. And the design right would protect a shape, a physical appearance. For all these three main categories of IP rights, we identified applicants, so companies, entities in Europe that are filing for those IP rights, and we identified the industry in which these applicants operate, and this made it possible for us to calculate the number for each type of IP right divided by the number of employees in the industry. And that gives us an intensity of the use of IP rights, and we considered as IP right intensive industries that made an above average use of these IP rights in terms of intensity.
But that's still only three of the IP rights. Nathan?
What we have not talked about yet are copyright, geographical indications, and variety rights. I start with plant variety rights. They are somewhat analogous to patents, but whereas patents cover inventions that have an industrial applications, we can think of plant varieties as covering innovation that have an agricultural applications. And by crops, it can be vegetables, it can be fruit, it can be flower. Just like with patents, there are some requirements that there has to be a novelty, it has to be in some sense improvement on the previous technology that existed and so on. And the way we identified the sectors that are intensive, that you make intensive use of plant variety rights was completely analogous to what Yann just described for patents, trademarks, and designs.
Right.
Then we have two more. Mm-hmm. We have copyright and geographical indications. I think copyright, most people have some familiarity with. Yeah. Copyright basically covers all type of artistic creations, whether it's literature, music, performances, etc.
Podcasts.
And it also covers certain technical issues, most prominently computer software. And copyright is quite difficult in terms of identifying the sectors that are intensive in copyright, because as opposed to the other four rights that we already discussed, copyright is not necessarily registered anywhere. Copyright is an IP right that you acquire at the moment of creating. So if you write a book or if you take a photograph, you instantly acquire copyright to that work of art, but you don't need to register it anywhere.
Right.
So therefore, for identifying the copyright-intensive industries, we relied on a methodology that was developed by WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, a UN body, which some years ago made a classification of all the sectors in the economy and to which extent those sectors are relevant for copyright. And we simply adopted that list and used that. And this was the same that our friends at the USPTO had done in their original study in 2012.
Okay, so that would be like the music industry, the film industry, broadcasters, and so on.
Yes, indeed. So the film industry, for example, would be considered to be, let's say, primary. The WIPO classifications operates with a hierarchy of sectors. Some are core copyright sectors, like film, like music, where the content is actually created. And some are non-core, but still relevant. So I give you an example. You write a book. That is a 100% core activity. But that book then needs to be printed and distributed. And that is something, so for example, paper, right? So paper, manufacturing of paper. Some part of the paper that is manufactured is used for printing books, and therefore is relevant for copyright. But only a small percentage, of course. And this is what the WIPO methodology gives us. And then finally, geographical indications, that is also a very unique IP right, because as opposed to the previous five IP rights that we have discussed, it is not owned by individual companies or individuals. It is owned by typically a producer association, can be even a public body. And it basically refers to the idea, and it's mostly relevant for food and wine, that certain products have defined characteristics that are tied to a specific geographical area. Mm-hmm. So examples include, for example, Bavarian beer or Parmesan cheese, which can only be made in a specific region of Italy. So therefore, because geographical indications are not owned by individual companies, we cannot rely on any kind of register to identify them. So for that, we had to use a very bespoke methodology using data from the European Commission, Directorate General for Agriculture, and other sources.
I'd like to go back to something that Nathan just said about IPR-intensive industries being a major component of the EU's external trade. But what's the score with internal trade, in other words, trade between EU member states, so the intra-EU situation?
Yes, this is a very interesting question, because this indeed also highlights one of the new features in this study compared to the previous study. This is the first time that we have actually also looked at intra-EU trade in the IPR-intensive sectors.
Okay.
And what we found is that the bulk of that, more than 75%, is also conducted within the IPR-intensive industries. And in fact, the volume of intra-EU trade in IPR-intensive goods and services exceeds the volume of EU's external trade.
Oof.
So this is yet another, let's say, another manifestation of the functioning of the internal market of the EU and the contribution made to that market by these IPR-intensive sectors. We see that, of course, in the intra-EU trade, and we also see that in the intra-EU flow of investment and jobs. So what we see, for example, is that in many member states, there is a very high contribution of IPR-intensive industries to their economy. But the actual IP rights, or let's say the innovations that are protected by those IP rights, may be generated somewhere else. And companies are taking advantage of opportunities to produce more cheaply, more effectively, whatever, in other member states. So as an example, we know, for example, that in the car industry, it's very widespread. So Volkswagen may have factories in the Czech Republic, or Renault may have factories in Romania, and so on. So this is yet another, this kind of cross-border flow of jobs and investment is also another testimony to the functioning of the internal market.
Yes, and this is a very interesting illustration of the benefits of the single market. Actually, what Nathan described is a pattern of division of labor or division of work across the EU economy, with the industries operating different functions in different parts of the EU and benefiting from that distribution of work with some areas specialized in innovation, some areas more specialized in manufacturing. And as a result, I think there's really a strong integration or synergy between IP-intensive industries and the single market. And it is that synergy that explains their performance abroad. We have seen that these industries generate highly performant externally in terms of external trade. They generate a trade surplus for the EU. And it is largely thanks to their ability to exploit this home base, I would say, of the EU single market. And of course, this is something very important for us, EU IPO and EPO, to monitor, because our role as European agencies is to give these industries access, easy access to a pan-European IP right protection.
But also, for me, there's a risk that we focus too much on big companies. Nathan gave the example of, you know, look at the way Volkswagen and Renault operate by having factories in different member states. But we know from the patent index, for example, the vast majority of applicants to the EPO for patents, and I guess it's a similar story for applicants to EU IPO for trademarks and designs, are actually small companies. And they might only be filing, you know, one or two applications per year, if that. The vast majority of users of IP are small companies. There's this hackneyed expression used by policymakers all over the world that small and medium enterprises are the backbone of the economy. But what can this study tell us about how SMEs are faring with IP in the EU?
So thank you, Jeremy. That's an important point. Clearly, IP-intensive industries may be led by some very large companies, although it's not the case for all these industries, but they also largely consist of smaller businesses that form an ecosystem together with the large companies. So, for instance, when Volkswagen invests in Hungary to produce cars there, the company works also with local suppliers, local small companies, and that forms an ecosystem, and the technology flows between these different partners. And actually, IP protection on a European scale matters even more for these small businesses. We have conducted a number of other studies with Nathan on this topic. This is the clear conclusion from these studies. So we find that actually small businesses that use IP rights are even more performant in terms of revenue per employee than larger companies that use IP rights, as compared with companies that do not use IP rights. So the premium generated or associated with IP rights is very high for these small businesses. And we find likewise that smaller European companies that have IP rights, that are filing IP rights, are much more likely to grow subsequently in the following years. And this likelihood is even higher when they have been filing for European IP rights, which makes sense when you think about it, because It means they are planning to grow European-wide.
Yeah,
and then maybe just to add to what Jan explained, indeed, this macroeconomic study actually supplements the micro-level studies that we have carried out together. And one of the other interesting findings of those studies, when we look at the level of individual SMEs, is that companies that have a bundle of IP rights, that combine different IP rights, for example, patents, trademarks, and designs, tend to perform even better than companies that only have one or two IP rights.
Mm.
So this is the complementarity that Jan alluded to earlier. And it makes intuitive sense. I mean, the logical sequence would be that the company, if we're talking about the physical product, the company creates some kind of innovation. It patents the underlying technology. But of course, the technology itself does not generate revenues. What generates revenues is when you have a product that you bring to the marketplace. And to do that, you have to brand that product, or you have to protect it with a trademark and possibly also a design if that's relevant. So it is this bundling effect of this complementarity of the IP rights that's also a very important message of the studies we have done together.
Okay, so can IP studies of the type that you've both been working on tell us something about technology trends? I'm used to other studies from Jan, which focus a very particular technology field, whether it's clean energy or plastics or smart connected objects and the fourth industrial revolution and so on. But this is a very different study. It's more macro in its consideration, but does it still nevertheless give us any insights into particular technology trends that are, I don't know, addressing the big challenges facing society?
Yes, of course. Actually, IP rights are the forefront of innovation and therefore of industry transformation. So it's important for us to monitor what is going on with respect to industry trends, technology trends. And we did so in this study with a specific focus on sustainable technology, sustainable innovation, and green transformation, because of the importance of the topic for both both agencies and more generally for the EU economy. To justify, if it be this importance, just one figure. So the International Energy Agency estimates that in order to reach net zero by 2050, about half of the technologies that are needed for that have yet to reach the market. And the time window is very short for that. And these technologies are all about patents, trademarks, bringing technology to market, as just explained by Nathan. So we need to monitor that. And for that reason, we dedicated a chapter to industries that specialize in climate change mitigation technologies and in green trademarks based on the specific data that we have prepared on both sides. So we have at the EPO a dedicated classification scheme for patents on climate change mitigation technologies, so we could track industries that are actively filing these kind of patents. And the EU IPO has likewise developed a similar scheme for trademarks that maybe Nathan can present in more details. To summarize the result, we find that industries that have an intensive use of these patents and trademarks represent actually a sizable part of the EU economy, about 10% of employment and 14% of GDP. Wow. And they are performant also in terms of external trade.
That's huge.
Yes, indeed. And what Jan just said at the very end now is also very important from an economic perspective, that this is one area of economic activity in which Europe really is a world leader. And this is a source of competitive advantage for the European economy. So this is truly a case of doing well by doing good.
Yeah.
When it comes to trademarks, I just want to mention what we have done is something very specific. Namely, we have looked at the specifications of the goods and services of all the trademarks that have ever been applied for at EU IPO. For those who are not familiar with it, when you apply for a trademark, you have to specify to which goods and services that trademark applies. There is a classification of that. Mm-hmm. And this is what we have analyzed. And what we find is that the importance of sectors that engage in this kind of green innovation is also increasing. And it's just another way to look at green innovation. You can look at the technology side, which is what the EPO classification does, or you can look at the trademarks. And what we also find, and this is very interesting, is that many of the industries that are active in these areas are not industries that we normally think of as particularly clean.
Oh.
It's often industries that are engaged, for example, in energy production or indeed in car manufacturing, etc. But when you think about it a little bit, it makes sense, because it's precisely the industries that have been historically dirty, quote unquote, that need to invest in making themselves cleaner for the new environment.
Oh, right. Okay. I would really like to carry on talking some more about the numbers, but alas, we've sort of run out of time. But it has been astonishing to see just how much impact IP makes on Europe's economy. So thank you both so much for sharing your insights and knowledge. Thanks to all of you out there for listening. Come and check out Jan and Nathan's study for yourselves. Visit epo.org. But for today, from Nathan, Jan, and myself, it's goodbye.
Farewell, do widzenia.
Au revoir.
Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.
Subscribe to the European Patent Office's podcast channel, Talk Innovation, at epo.org or on your favorite podcast platform. Let's talk innovation.